I would like to welcome everybody to our next episode. I'm going to stop counting them, Bobbo. It's our next episode.
We got so many, we can't even bank them in the thing.
That's
right.
We've
got to figure out a new strategy. We've got
to figure out a new way.
That's right.
But that being said, I'd like to welcome everybody to the next episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. And Bob, we've, you know, prior to starting this broadcast, we've had some pretty deep conversations, and I don't know where to start, but I know that all of them pertain to what we're going to talk about today. And so I think, Bob, I'm going to volley this one to you. You know, where do we start today?
Let's start with this. When you introduce us each week, Jamie, you say Two Men in a Bible, which is the title of our podcast, and you say Fighting the Cosmic Battle. And we would have put that on the podcast. It's just too long.
Right.
But that's how we perceive what we're doing. But there's a danger in that title, and that is to think that, oh, it's just when we're doing this that we're fighting the cosmic battle, and it's not. And there are plenty of people who make the same mistake concerning things like church. You know, on Sunday morning from 9 to 10:30, I'm fighting the cosmic battle. But after that, I kick back and I just cruise along with the world. The cosmic battle's 24 hours a day.
Well, now, you've been a pastor how long, Bob?
No, I don't know how to answer those questions.
10 plus
because,
years?
Since the Lord saved me, because you're what the Lord has gifted you with. Because pastor is not necessarily the title of a position. Pastor's a spiritual gift. So you don't have to be working in a church, you know, with that title over your office door or something to be a pastor. You're a pastor if God gifts you that way. So that happened for me in 1981. So that's too long now to do the math.
No.
That's exceeded my math limits. Once it gets past 10, you know, the digits on my hands, I'm lost.
Now, before we get into today's verses, I mean, did you notice the cosmic battle early?
I was saved in the midst of cosmic battle. So that's always been very close to my heart. So that was day one for me. Night one.
Well, and as we talk, Bobbo, you know my story. You know the depths that I was in. And I could share with you that I didn't know the cosmic battle was brewing before I started to read the truth and start to understand the truth and the Bible and God's words. And I think a lot of us find ourselves in that position. And with the text that we're going to read today, we're going to talk a lot about faith. And it's going to push faith to a point, you know, that I think most people today wouldn't even go to, you know, when we're talking about Isaac and Abraham. And so I think it's important that we talk about, prior to the episode, or as we begin this episode, you know, really, what is faith? Where does it come from? How would you describe faith?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, my first gut response whenever someone asks me a question that's within the sphere of the Scriptures, you know, I try to think through the Scripture. So I have my own personal gut response to that, but I always try to temper that through the grit of the Word of God. So in Hebrews chapter 11, faith is described exactly by the author of the book of Hebrews, which is, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. That's Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. And I'm not a chapter and verse guy, actually.
Right.
I should be, but I'm not. I've never absorbed the Scriptures that way, but that's how that verse reads. So the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. So let me put that in more common terms, because even with a statement like that, you have to see that within the totality of the Scriptures. So to synthesize that into language for us today is, faith is seeing things the way they really are. the guy who wrote Sawyer, right?
Samuel Clemens.
Yeah, yeah. Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer. Samuel Clemens had a... The guy was a genius.
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. Right. I mean, the guy was a genius, truly.
Mm-hmm.
Is so perceptive and could cut through so many matters, but not a Christian. And said two of the most poignant statements about the scriptures that I've ever heard. Sometimes it's very helpful to contrast the truth of God with another point of view, and Twain's great for that. The first thing he said, and then I'll get to the faith statement. The first thing he said about the scriptures was, it's not the things in the Bible that are hard to understand that scare me. It's the things that are crystal clear. And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. The second thing he said was, in a jesting moment, but, you know, really speaking his heart through humor, was faith is believing what you know ain't so. And he's 100% wrong.
Yeah.
But he's exactly where a lot of people are. And that's an that accurately characterizes most people. But it's not the biblical definition of faith. Well, faith is seeing things the way they really are.
They really are.
Them through God's eyes. Like, as an example in the scriptures, we'll get to this some, you know, years down the road from now as we continue with our podcast. But when Elisha the prophet is surrounded by the armies of the Arameans, and he has his servant with him, and they wake up in the morning, and it's just two guys, and they're surrounded by an army. And the servant, you know, is going, man, we're out. This is the end of our road. And Elisha goes, no problem. Guy's like, well, what do you mean? Of course, I'm putting this story in my words. Many people are familiar with this story, but Elisha says, God, show him what's really out there. And the guy looks out the window, and there's this massive angelic army that is unseen to the normal human eye, but it's there, right? So Elisha never saw that as an issue. Who was right? Was Gehazi, his servant, who was blind before Elisha opened his eyes, right? Humanly speaking,
yes.
That servant is holding every card.
Right.
Right?
But
in reality, he's got nothing. God is trumping that, and Elisha knows it. There's an angelic army there.
Now, question then, Bob. You know, our listeners, you know, I think all of us have been in, you know, in times of turmoil and, you know, where do I turn? And that particular scripture that you're talking about was very important in my life, because when I realized that, when I realized the truth, and that there were those quote-unquote protectors, quote-unquote warriors, angels that were present, everything changed. If you're looking at a formula, if you're looking at a mathematical formula, and you've got this, 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 and this, and equals this, and then you throw in that changes everything. But it really changed my perception, it changed my understanding, and it also changed my relationship.
Yep, it's kind of like this. I had someday this guy will listen to the podcast. Great guy, and this was years ago when we were young men. And we were living in Eastvale in a house together. The name of the house was The Sanctuary. And it was a discipleship ministry. And we loved to goof off. I mean, we were in our mid to early 20s. You know, we're kids. You'd work on the ski mountain or something and come home and just want to play games. You know, that was life at that time. And so we were playing this card game one time. And we've been playing for an hour or so. And you know, I'm looking around, and all of a sudden we get done with the hand, and it's one of those things where at the end of the round, you sort of count up your points. And I'm looking at this guy's hand, and somebody asks him at the end of the round, how many points do you have? And he says, like, whatever he says, 6, 7. And I'm looking at his hand, realizing he has no idea how we're actually keeping score. He doesn't know what counts for points, because he had like 15 or 16. And it wasn't like he was cheating. You could tell he didn't really know how we were keeping score. And that, to me, typifies how most people are going through life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking at their quote, hand, i.e. their family, their home, their financial situation, their job, and, quote, adding up their points, and you're going, that isn't how we're keeping score. That isn't the game we're playing.
Well, and I think you talked about it as a spiritual Switzerland. There is none.
No.
And I think it's important to point out again in this episode that whether you believe you're in the cosmic battle or not,
You're in. Yeah.
You are in.
Belief, in other words, Jamie, sorry to interrupt you, just so get back to your point, but belief doesn't change anything. Right? And I think some people have that perspective in their creed. You know, if I believe this enough, God will act on my belief. And you're like, whoa. God's not an enabler. He's not bound to act on your belief. When you align with Him, that's when things begin to happen. Not you getting God to align with you. That's a dead end.
Well, and I think that goes to another point we were talking about earlier is that, and again, I think everything we're talking about lends to the scripture that we're going to talk about today. But if you believe your God, quote unquote, is this, this, and this, typically, how you describe your God is very similar to yourself.
That's right.
And I think we all fall into that trap. Because, number one, we're a fallen race, as of Genesis 3. So, there's a given. There's nobody perfect out there. There's nobody that can say, God is just like me.
Yeah.
And I believe that it's important to understand the truth of what's being written down here and who God is, as we pointed out, it's building that relationship with God. It's understanding Him. If you're going to build a relationship with a friend, you get to know him. If you're going to build a relationship with a wife, you absolutely have to know him. If you're going to build a relationship with your children, you have to get to know him. How can you build a relationship with God if you don't know Him?
That's exactly right. You know, one of the images I think of often for myself, you've heard me discuss often, you know, sitting in a chair in a living room, this big comfortable chair with God, you know, and He's got His arms around you, you're on His lap, and you're reading His words together, and He's pointing out to you what He's talking about. But another image that I hold dear to my heart is walking through a forest. You know, I just love God's creation. And mm-hmm. there's still Edith Schaefer, the wife of Francis Schaefer, used to say this. And she used to come to Vail, and we'd walk through the village and so on, and she'd point out in her terms what she called God's leftover beauty, you know, after the fall, the fallen creation. But there's still, the pieces are broken, but you could still get a pretty good glimpse of what it must have been.
Absolutely.
Like. I mean, you go to, and obviously, we live in a paradise here in the Vail Valley at the far west end of that. But even here, or you go to somewhere like the Napa Valley or sort of mm-hmm. Asheville, North Carolina, or the Coupe de Grasse, Cleveland, Ohio. And I mean, you see the leftover beauty and imagine what that must have been like. So for me, it's like walking through this forest and there's streams and trees, but there's no path. And you're lost in the forest. Well, imagine what it would be like to have God holding your hand, walking next to you, and saying, this way, you know, this way, this way. And what a beautiful trip that would be. That's how I see reading the scripture. So it's not so much that we want to, in a sense, take a sledgehammer and pound these things into people's hearts, because literally you cannot do that. We offer them as a journey. Walk alongside us on this path through the forest and let God show you what's going on. That's what we offer. And we're fallible. You know, as we point out the scriptures, we do our homework. But ultimately, it's up to each person to discern in their heart, you know, the truth of the words of God, and hopefully
to build that relationship
and hopefully our words are helpful, but our words are not God's words. We're just trying to help. God's right. words are on this page.
Well, and it's important to understand that, because unless you can wrap your brain around that as being the truth, it's gonna be a hard pull.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's a decision that you make in your heart. Contrary to what many believe, the truth detector that every person is born with is actually in your heart. It's not in your mind. Though we don't jettison logic or reason, in fact, we believe those are God-given tools
right.
to help discern the truth. But it's much more a moral decision in your heart than it is a perception in your brain.
Well, and I think I'd like to point out now again, you know, those of our listeners who enjoy this podcast, who have received benefits and it's maybe been eye-opening, share it with somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, we're called to do that. Or, you know, we're not called to put the light under a bushel basket, right?
Yeah, that's right. And what it's ultimately designed for, though it can be used for many things, our perception of what we're designed for is to read the Bible from the very beginning, from page one, and go straight through and learn the story. Yeah, you know, there's much more to our relationship with the Lord from that, but that is the foundation of it. Learn the story. Because in the end, you will realize you're in the story. This isn't a story that you just hold at arm's
mm-hmm.
length.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, that was great for Joe, or, you know, I'm really glad that it worked out for Abraham, or, all right, David finally got it together. You're in the story. All of us are. We're in there. I feel like these words were written as just on a personal level, directly to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize they're not about, like, Abraham's stories about Abraham, but it's written to me for me to understand the Lord's activity with the human race.
And back to what we were talking about earlier, to build that relationship, you know, to take that a step further. When you met Kathy, you knew you loved her. But
oh, well, she chased me for calm down now.
So, you knew you loved her, and you wanted to get to know more about her, right?
I've got to interrupt you. This is very interesting, and this serves a great, great purpose. Here's what I knew about Kathy. I knew her before we actually met, because I was 37. When we met, 38 when we got married, and I had seen her, though she had seen me, but she wouldn't know what was, I mean, mm-hmm. as a person in a crowd, but to her, to me, she was someone who stood out. I had seen her, and I had read about her. So when we met and began to date, when you said, you know, you knew you loved her, here's what I did, because this is how I think God interacted with me. I decided. I was not compelled by some feeling, you know, oh, I'm head over heels in love. That's not how it worked for me. I decided that was the one for me. And then you make good on that decision, and that's how it worked for me. And I think that's was the Lord's interaction with me, was he decided
mm-hmm.
in my favor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking that guy. And see, then so my relationship with her, you know, say we hit a bump in the road. Well, in one sense, I don't care, because I've already decided.
Right.
I made that decision a long time. I'm not changing my decision.
We'll get over the bump.
Yeah. All right. Well, we press on. I already mm-hmm. decided. I mean, those. And for her, initially, I think that was a bit of an affront, you know, because I think she sort of expected me to be the quote head over heels mm-hmm. in love, kind of, you know, the emotional response, but I was a decisional, I was a volitional response. So I've decided this. So then we moved on.
And as you were sharing that story, it made me think of what you point out over and over, which is God deciding we're his.
That's exactly right. You were chosen.
Yep, that's mine. That's my guy.
That's exactly
that's
right.
Gal.
And think of the security of that. It's not like, oh man, for the last month, you've blown me away, I'm so... Well, then you drop the ball. And you can imagine God going, you need to rethink this. But that's not how it happens, right? He decided. Knowing, with full knowledge, he's omniscient. So he knows, he's looking at my whole life, knowing how many times I'm going to drop the ball, and still decided for me. It's so secure.
Well, what a great segue to talk about Abraham, who's, you know, we're going to read about him today. I mean, God decided he was his guy.
That's right. And he made an awfully good decision.
I think so. I mean, Abraham showed up, you know, and I think it's important for us to remember again, Abraham is human, correct?
Yeah, and you see him drop the ball, you know, with Abimelech, and he's twisting the truth, you know, literally, let's not be, he's lying
right.
about Sarah.
Right.
But he's the guy, man, he's going to hit a home run here.
And so when God chooses you, what a blessing.
Yeah, you imagine the cosmic transaction that takes place when we say, what a blessing. It would take 100 podcasts just to detail out how the table has just shifted in your favor when he chooses you. I mean, you know... Mm-hmm. Is it, okay, now your life's going to be better? Well, yes and no. In the immediate 60, 70 years, no, you're going to hit some bumps in the road because you're living in a fallen world.
Right.
And you're not part of that. You've been transferred to another kingdom, so there's going to be a lot of friction in your life. But for the next eternity, you're set. You won the lottery a thousand
Literally,
times
yeah.
over.
Yeah,
the lottery literally.
Right.
1,000 times over, you know, infinity times over.
Well, and again, I think that's important for our listeners, not only to hear that, but to embody that God, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Bob, but chose us. You know, we are... Did he choose us or we choose him?
Well, that's a both. God's choice would be initial in that sense, but you need to respond to that, and that's your choice. So it's a both. But if you're pressing for, like, why? That I cannot answer. That's only up to the Lord. I don't know why. He says to Israel at one point, you know, don't think I chose you because you were the greatest nation. I chose you, I'm paraphrasing, because you were a bunch of slaves. You had nothing. That way my glory shines forth.
Right.
Right? I don't choose the world's winners. I usually choose the world's losers.
Well, and there's stories, there's more than one story in the Bible that follows that pattern you were just talking about.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
And God's power, as you point out over and over, omnipotent, omniscient, he knows.
If you can just get those two in there, along with number three, it's sort of like the trinity of God's attributes, though I hesitate to say it that way, but for the sake of illustration, holiness is always number one. That trumps everything. His holiness informs all his other attributes. But his holiness, his omnipotence, and his omniscience, if you could just get those three down in your life, you'd be pure.
Well, and the last thing I wanted to bring up, Bob, before we get into the scripture is, today, as you know, I was tending my yard, and I was pulling weeds. And maybe I'm a little weird, but as I was out there pulling weeds, I was in just... you know, sitting there thinking I'm pulling weeds, and I got to thinking about it, and I know there's a verse that talks about the weeds and the tares, and
Matthew chapter 13,
right? And I was pulling these weeds, and I thought, man, this is very, very reminiscent what's the word I'm looking, we'll say reminiscent of life. because in life, there are weeds being planted in our lives.
Okay, we all have weeds in our garden.
And as you've taught me, our job is to keep the garden.
That's right. As the that's exactly right. Genesis 1 and 2, Adam and Eve, what was their job? Ministers in the temple of God, and they were to keep it clean.
And so, as I got to thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Bob, but I got to thinking about it, and that's the same thing we need to do in our lives, is to keep, you know, our lives weed free.
That's exactly right. So the way Paul would say that is, if by the Spirit of God you are putting to death the deeds of the flesh, then you are truly children of God. That's exactly what he's talking about. So the reason, though, that those thoughts are flowing through your mind while you're doing yard work is because you're bathing yourself in the Scriptures. And so as you do that, then God begins to take over your thought life, and no matter what you're doing, he's in there, you know, bringing his Scriptures to mind and so on, and you become transformed. But if you don't do the labor of love, of putting his word in your mind to begin with, then you are just out there pulling weeds.
Right.
Right. It's a thankless task. You know,
it's a labor.
For you, that time was redeemed. That time, you actually grew during that time. For most people, they missed a couple games. They missed the
right.
Memorial Golf Tournament, you know, but nothing more than that. You actually grew during that time.
Well, and I like to think that that's how we can grow with our relationship with God, is to realize that it's not just when we're right here in the book that we're with him. He's with us every day.
Yeah, 24/7. But you have to do that work, mm-hmm. the labor of love, of putting his words in your mind. And then from there, that's right, the Spirit can take that and use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So as we dive into today's word, Bob, you know, I'd just like our listeners to remember, you know, and this is, you know, from my perspective, that this is building a relationship with your Father. Right now, you know, here's Dad. Here, you know, we're it's an introduction. We're still in Genesis. You know, we're in chapter 21 now.
And we're getting close to halfway.
We're halfway
through. We're towards
through.
The end of the second quarter of a basketball game.
Well, and how long has this taken us, Bob? Several months, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's important that we all realize that this isn't a book that we just read and we can internalize it, and it's, you know.
Well, think of it this way, Jamie, and sorry to interrupt you, but how long was it from the day Sophia came into this world? She conceived 9 months mm-hmm. earlier, but was born, till we could actually talk to each other?
Oh, yeah.
And that was a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even then, you know, initially it's don't do that, don't do this. You know, how long until we could actually have a conversation of fellowship, you know, of understanding?
It only took me 41
years.
She's fast.
I mean, for Sophia, it was 3 or 4. But even there, that's 4 years.
Yeah.
That's a lot of how much time together? Mm-hmm. You know, almost 4 years. 24/7 before we could begin to talk, and I could take her out on our deck in Minturn. At that time, we were right over the river, the Eagle River, where it begins there in Minturn, and say, Sophia, who made all this? And she would say, God made this.
Right.
Sophia, who made that river? God made that river. Who made that mountain? God made that mountain. Why did he do that, Sophia? And who are you? And she would answer me. I mean, that was 4 years until we could do that.
Bob, it was 40 years until I could do that. You know, literally. And I say that, you know, happy on one side and depressed on the other. That it, you know, depressed that it took me that long. Happy that I finally got it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the future now is you know, once you get through that funnel, once it happens, now the future's, you know, wide open.
Well, and today we're gonna talk about offspring, and we're gonna talk about, you know, children, and I think it's you know, I don't know, Bible, you know, for me, family is very, very, very important, as it is for you. But the more I build a relationship with God and the more I understand His truths, I understand my role as a father differently as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Abraham, you know, today we're gonna read a scripture that I think all of us are pretty familiar with. But I think it really puts fatherhood in a different perspective.
Well, let's come back to that. Let's read the chapter and then let's ask it that same
question. All right, my friend.
So this is Genesis 21. Then the Lord took note of Sarah, as He had said. And the Lord did for Sarah as He had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, "God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me." And she said, "Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age." The child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on a day that Isaac was weaned. Now Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, mocking. Therefore she said to Abraham, "Drive out this maid and her son, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac." And the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. But God said to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. For through Isaac your descendants shall be named. And of the son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant." So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water, gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder, and gave her the boy, sent her away. And she departed and wandered about the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water in the skin was used up, and she left the boy under one of the bushes. And then she went and sat down opposite him, about a bow shot away, for she said, "Do not let me see the boy die." And she sat opposite him, lifted up her voice, and wept. God heard the lad crying. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What's the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes and saw a well of water. She went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. God was with the lad, and he grew, and he lived in the wilderness and became an archer. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now it came about at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, "God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me, or with my offspring, or with my posterity, but according to the kindness that I have shown you, you shall show to me and to the land in which I have sojourned." Abraham said, "I swear it." But Abraham complained to Abimelech because of the well of water which the servants of Abimelech had seized. And Abimelech said, "I do not know who's done this thing. Neither did you tell me, nor did I hear it until today." Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. Then Abraham sent 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What do these 7 ewe lambs mean which you have set by themselves?" And he said, "You shall take these 7 ewe lambs, from my hand in order that it may be a witness to me that I dug this well. Therefore he called that place Beersheba, because there the two of them took an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba, and Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, arose and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree at Beersheba, and there he called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the land of the Philistines for many days.
Very, very interesting.
But what do you think, Jamie?
Well, you know, as we were talking earlier, you know, in this particular passage, I see several things. You know, one family. Well, one and two family. Our family are earthly families, as well as how our earthly families are connected with God. And we've been, how many chapters and verses? It seems like a while, you know, in my opinion, since God told Abraham, it's going to be a year and you're going to have a kid.
Yeah, lots of pages have turned since then. That's exactly right. One thing you have to keep in mind as you're reading narrative literature, which is what we're in now, you've got to identify the genre of the literature reading. Sometimes you're in poetry, sometimes you're in apocalyptic, sometimes you're in narrative. In fact, quite often you're in narrative. And there are other genres. Gospel's its own genre, similar to narrative, but a bit different. Letter writing, Romans, Ephesians, that's different. But in narrative, you have to keep track of story time.
Gotcha.
And in story time, it's been a year. But that year, a lot of pages have... In other words, story time has slowed down.
Sodom's gone?
Yes. And the first scene with Abimelech... You know, Abimelech took Sarah's wife, and it takes a while... Or, excuse me, took Abraham's wife, Sarah. And it would have taken a while for him to realize, hey, no one in my whole kingdom is giving birth. Mm-hmm. That, you know, months would have to go by before you realize that. So, here's an important point, though, about story time. When we get to the Gospels, this is to whet our listeners' appetite for 10 years down the road now. When we get to the Gospels... And Jesus' life is portrayed in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. The last half, a little bit less than that, 40 to 45% of what they had to say took place in 1 week. And the first 55% took place in 3 years.
Right.
So story time-wise, everything slows down about that last week. And that's the week where he goes to the cross. So for what you're noticing intuitively, Jamie, as a good reader of the Word of God, is that story time has slowed down here. Everything's crawling to a stop around the next chapter. This birth and then what's going to happen next. Pardon me?
We're getting more specific descriptions.
A lot of detail about these events in the last few pages. What else did you notice?
And so Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time. I saw several times. Then the Lord took note of Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the appointed time.
Okay, let me stop you before you go on and give you a little star, because... You know, now and then I got to give you a C-. But that's all going to get trumped. Because, you see my commentaries here, sitting here on the thing?
Right.
All of them are going to say exactly what you just said.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're going, whoa, look at this. The way Moses is portraying this is, don't miss the point as the reader that God doesn't fail in his promises. This is exactly as he said. So let's expand that from Genesis 21 to the whole book. if this whole book is his word, just as the first 20 chapters were, how many things are going to happen just as he said? How many?
I'd say all of them.
All of them are going to happen just as he said. Not as the world says. As he said. The world would say, Sarah, you quit menstruating like 40 years ago. You're not going to have a kid. Abraham, you know, that's nice that you got a personal God that speaks to you and all that. You're not having a kid. Not through Sarah. You may be able to do your job in your old age. I imagine you might be a little bit unique amongst us. Not through Sarah. And yes, it was through Sarah. Just as God said. Human limitations are not pertinent to God.
Well, as you pointed out in a story this morning, Bob, and we're doing our podcast on a Sunday, so we had our fellowship this morning. We were in the Bible this morning. And you pointed out a story about a girl that...
Oh, yeah.
Shouldn't...
Not from the scriptures, but right. Just a story right. From modern life, yeah.
And...
Her name is Stephanie.
And that's when right. You brought that up, Bob, it made me think of that story.
Yeah. It's not humanly possible what happened to her, but it did happen. And the doctors will tell you that.
Right.
Not humanly possible that you could have your reproductive organs destroyed and still have a child like that. And she's had three.
And just to, in a nutshell, to give the story to our listeners, young girl raped brutally.
Tortured
for years because she was the daughter of a Vietnamese
social
and
outcast.
And a black
American soldier. Just social outcast.
And I've read a little bit about that, Bob, and I believe they called those devil childs, right?
That is exactly the term they used on the broadcast to describe it. That's right.
And so she was ostracized by her whole community. Luckily, she was adopted.
Yep. Picked up by an orphanage and adopted out of the orphanage.
And went on to have three children.
Yeah.
When...
Physically not possible.
Impossible.
Yep. That's right.
I think that's a great today story to really mirror, you know, what Sarah was blessed with in what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. And all the world, she's saying, everybody who hears about this will know. Now, in some ways, this is a bit pushing the text, but not too far. But so don't put this in your back pocket. This is directly from the Lord. But it's still, had Sarah given birth to a child when she's 30, between her and Abraham,
mm-hmm.
and you're walking down the street in Gaza, wherever they are, right? Wandering around in the promised land. Nobody bats an eyelash.
Right.
And she's 90 plus. And Abraham's 100, yeah, they take notice of that. And what do they notice? That's impossible. So how did that happen? And then what do they say? Well, Yahweh did this. And then people know. So in other words, sometimes, like I'm saying, don't press it too far, but sometimes your individual hardship is for the purpose of God's glory. He could have done it right off the bat. But when he waits, now everybody needs to take notice. He's spreading the news about himself.
Well, and there's no question. There is no question, you know, where the blessings came from.
That's right. That's right. They couldn't have just had a kid because they're following the natural way of life. No, somebody intervened there. Well, that's right. God intervened.
Well, and something that I just thought of this right now, Bob, so, you know, help me patina it. But Sarah, over and over, in her old age, was, I don't know what the word is described, but described as a very beautiful woman.
Yeah, she's going to catch your eye.
Yeah.
Even in her old age. Abimelech wants her in his harem, mm-hmm. and so on, even in her old age. So she's going to gather a lot of attention just walking down the street.
Right. And, you know, hence the reason that Abraham, you know, and I've struggled with this one, but came up with the lie or perpetrated the lie.
Yeah, he's afraid. This wife's so beautiful, he's afraid.
But living in a whole different culture than we're living in now.
Yeah.
And, again, to remember, because I know that some, and I'll use this loosely, but some sideline readers of the Bible had pointed that out before, that, hey, Abraham's not, you know, perfect. You know, he's human.
He's human.
And I think it's important for us to realize that all of us are human.
Hence, all the more glory when he hits
right.
a home run. Because he
right.
could have struck out.
Right. It would have been very easy to strike out.
Yeah.
He could have just taken the strikeout and not even got up to the plate and just, mm-hmm. you know, taken off and kept going. But over and over for me, Bob, what I hear when I hear about Abraham is it really hammers through not only the idea of faith, but the working action of faith. Because here's a guy 100 years.
Yeah.
And how many years ago had God told him that I will give you a son?
Yeah, you know, I forget to calculate that, but it's been more than a decade. And
right.
probably 2.5 decades.
Right.
It's probably been about 25 years since God has said this.
And he's still there.
Yeah. The promise has been on the table, unfulfilled, for 25 years. But, by the way, things have been happening that indicate the guy that God is there.
Well, yeah.
You know, Abraham's been growing. You know, his mm-hmm. family's huge. He's very powerful. He's powerful enough to take on foreign armies, multiple foreign armies.
He saw his nephew
win.
Delivered out of Sodom.
Yeah, he's powerful enough to pray over a city and have God's involvement, you know, directed by his prayer and so on. So things have been happening, but no. He doesn't have a kid by
right.
his wife. That promise, which is the main one, remains unfulfilled. But God has given him enough breadcrumbs, so to speak, that you're on the right path here. Come on, we're getting there.
Well, and I think for us lay people, God has promised us everlasting life.
That's right.
Do we believe that every day of our lives?
That's the question.
You know, and
I want to just step in and say, yes, I believe that.
I
for
absolutely
me personally,
do.
But,
yes.
But yes, I understand the question.
Yes.
He has promised that.
And not only do we believe it, but do we embody it? And for me, Bob, that was the hard part to pull together.
Yeah. And
believing in God and believing God, like we always talk.
Yeah, and there's different ways that comes up in your life. Just to be personal, you know, I like when I just jump in and interrupt you and go, yeah, I want to say
right,
yes.
Right.
Like, I want to say yes. I don't want to wait till you call on me. I want to say right now, yes, I believe that. But as you know, I mean, I was as close to death as you could get 2 years
ago.
Yes, I
do know.
And I want to tell you, there's no fear of that. I mean, I remember being very peaceful, like, man, you know, Lord, my daughter's only 8. I know Kathy will be fine. I mean, she's a go-getter. She can take care of herself and so on. I understand that. Emotionally be hard on her, but Kathy will be all right. But, man, my daughter's only 8, but okay. You know, you got a plan for that. If you're taking me now, I trust you. She actually belongs to you way more than she belongs to me, so I know you got it. Okay, I'm ready. And then I didn't die. And, you know, half of me was going like, man, I can't even do that right. You know? What's the deal? But there's no fear in
right.
that. And Kathy will tell you the story sometime. You ought to ask her. Partially I was drugged, but sometimes, you know, it's almost like with alcohol. One of the things alcohol does with you is you're actually speaking your heart
right.
a lot more than without it, you know, because your inhibitions are it was embarrassed because I was telling all the nurses and the anesthesiologists and all that, hey, do you know the Lord? here's the deal. Again, telling them the gospel and so on. And I remember one of them literally saying she felt so bad because she hadn't, you know, been to church in a while, and she felt convicted as she was wheeling me into the elevator. But all that to say, if that was a measure of a test, yeah, there's total peace there. I mean, I feel like I'm going to live forever. Death for me is just passageway into what I've been waiting for the whole time.
Well, and I think Abraham really is a good illustration of that point. You know, what I see there is he believed firmly, and that belief didn't falter. His faith got stronger, and I know, you know, just speaking from my point of view, I know the more I believe God, the stronger I get.
That's exactly right. That's good. Now, let's pick up another thing in the text, because we get a decent chunk of verses about Sarah saying, hey, I don't want Ishmael in the household anymore.
Right, from the next point on.
Yeah, and that grieves Abraham, because
right.
He's the father of that. Sarah's not the mother of Ishmael, right? But for Abraham, that's one of his children.
Right.
And God is so strong that God has to intervene. Hey, listen to Sarah on this. Because Abraham, you know, to me, it's very subtle. So I also offer this for our listeners as something to just consider. You don't have to abide by this or treasure this. But to me, Abraham would not have done that on his own. He would not have kicked Ishmael out. You get the sense mm-hmm. from this text, he loved that kid. That's
mm-hmm.
his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's raised him.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Isaac is the child of the promise, but Ishmael's his kid. And so God intervenes. Hey, at this point, listen to Sarah.
Which is interesting.
It's very interesting because Sarah steered him wrong earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And Eve steered Adam wrong. And at this point, God's saying, hey, you need to listen to Sarah. And it's not necessarily so much a, you know, he's not making gender distinctions or listen to the wife more than that. He's just saying, hey, Abraham wouldn't have done that on his own. He loves the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And God understands that, but he's trumping that.
In a sense, is there a I don't know, how do I put this, Bob? It's Sarah brought that on herself.
It's that's not the right path.
No,
the right path through this text is to bring it to ourselves and to our readers. God knows you. He knows you intimately.
And he knew back then.
And he's always known every individual that way. And he knows the way he's designed you and what pulls you in one direction or another. And he knows that. And so he knows Abraham is, he's not kicking Ishmael out. That's his son. But he's going to trump that because Isaac is the child of promise. So he tells him, you know, Abraham, listen to Sarah now. I'm trumping your natural instincts. And he has to intervene to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's an Abraham. Without God telling him, Abraham would not have done that. You know, Sarah can complain all she wants. Abraham's not going to do that.
Right.
But when God intervenes, okay, then he does it. And it's almost, Jamie, let's use our baseball analogy again. In the next chapter, he's going to hit a homer.
Right.
Okay, so let's imagine Abraham is the cleanup hitter. In the next chapter, he's batting fourth.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in this chapter, he's batting third. And God's telling him, just get on base. And he doesn't want to, you know, he does not want to do that. It's like get hit by the pitch or take a walk, do whatever you need to do, but get on base. And he passes this test. And I don't think this was easy for him to send Hagar and Ishmael out.
No, it doesn't seem like that to me at all. and you know, being a father as we both are, that would be as difficult as anything. Now,
but think one more. Sorry to interrupt you again. Think about modern day.
Yes,
Abraham does love Ishmael.
Yeah,
but he is not the child of, right? He's not in the seed. Right, Jamie, as we've been following the biggest picture, the cosmic battle, that is not the path. I understand, Abraham, it's not a wrong path. It's not morally wrong for you to love this child, blah, blah, blah. It's not the path.
So, in verse 13, where it says, "And of the son of the maid I will make a nation also."
Because he is your descendant. Abraham's the heir of blessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes through him. And I'll favor your child, Abraham. I'll do great things for him because he's from you. But that's not the one of the promise.
Now, I know we talked about it, I think, a couple of podcasts ago. But who did, what nation descended out of?
Oh, you always ask me this stuff. This is the Arabs, I think. Don't quote me on that. Honestly, I don't trace it through that well, and I apologize to our listeners and everything. I don't have that answer, but I'm pretty sure it's the Arabs. So, Palestinian, you know, Iran, Iraq. It's hard to push the limits of this that far. It's not the child of promise.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So, off she went.
Still descended from Abraham, though.
Right.
So be careful with those guys. They have a play. They have a claim. They don't have the trump card. Israel has a trump card, but they have a card.
Right.
They got dealt a hand, but they're not the trump.
So, Hagar heads out. She's sent out.
Yes.
I can't imagine what that would have felt like, you know, because you're in the middle of nowhere, you and your kid.
Yeah.
Hungry.
Yeah.
Tired.
Yeah. You're about to die.
Hurting.
You perish. You don't have any army around you like Abraham does, right? You've been sent out from a very powerful household.
And who shows up?
God shows up. That's exactly right.
He hears the boy cry.
Yes.
And
that's a great point, Jamie. You know, anybody who's been sent out against their desire or their, you know, they had nothing to do with it. They were just sent off. They were sent away. Not from God. God's there.
He specifically points out.
I mean,
that
he shows
he
up
heard.
In person.
Yes.
That's pretty powerful.
Yes, for Hagar.
Yeah. A servant.
And if we go back in the story, Sarah, this was Sarah's crutch to what she really wanted to have happen.
That's right.
And God shows up.
God shows up on her behalf.
Yes.
Provides water for, hey, I'm going to make a nation out of your kid, you know. I'm on your side. You are not a child of promise, but I'm on your side. Every human being is in his image. It's not as if God is racist.
That's the point I was just going to talk about, Bob, because I have a very good friend that when I was sharing the truth with her, what she shared with me was that she didn't feel worthy of God.
That's common.
And I think this is a great point for all of us to realize.
Who has told her that?
Right. The cosmic battle.
I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I just almost,
who's
when people say that, I just almost, I've heard that a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sincere. You see their pain.
Absolutely.
When they're telling you that. And you just want to weep. And who told you that you were not worthy of the God of the universe? You're in his image. You're everything to him. If it would have been you and no one else alive on earth, Jesus would have died in your place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is that person actually worth? She's worth Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But what's his value? infinite.
Well, in my response, Bob, I said, who told you that lie?
Yeah, who told you you weren't worth that?
You know, and who, you know, as we're in Genesis right now, what is the tool of the dark side?
The lie. That's right.
You're over not, and over.
Yeah, you're a worm.
And you know, that blows me away, Bob, because if you think about it, you're, I don't even know how to put this, you're Satan, and you're...
You asking me to imagine
No, that's why I said I'm trying to figure out how to put this.
So they're think Satan, like the devil, is
right?
That what you're saying?
You're right.
Think like the enemy.
Right.
Okay.
And your only tool is a lie. You have everything else you can do because you are a fallen angel.
Yeah.
You have everything else you can use. And this, Bob, rings true in my brain over and over and over every day. He chose a lie. He could have done anything else.
That's a great way to say it. Let's imagine the devil as he looks God in the face and walks away. And as he walks away, there's a weapons table on the side.
Mm-hmm.
God says, I'll let you choose one of those. You want to take me on? Pick one of those weapons. And he
pick your poison.
He surveys the table. Right? There's a lot of things he could use on there. What better thing to pick than the lie?
Which, you know, if you really think about it, Bob, the lie, you know, in most people's minds is not that strong. You know, he could have chosen earthquakes, he could have chosen magic, he could have chosen, I mean, he had the whole table.
Yeah.
He chose one thing, and he started using it in Genesis 3, and he hasn't stopped yet.
That's right.
Because it works. It's like you and I, you know, you and I are football fans,
yeah,
and we talk about it over and over. It's 44 dive.
Yeah.
On one.
If that play works, why would you run any other play until they stop that one?
And so here, again, is another, am I wrong? Is this another illustration of that same?
It's subtle, but yes, it's there. But mostly what we're talking about is the application of it in our friends,
mm-hmm,
whom when we share the faith with them, you know, respond in some form or fashion, often directly, I'm not worthy of that. And our heart just breaks, and you just say, you're worthy of everything. You're, the universe itself is not enough to pay for you. The death of Christ is the only thing that's equal to what you're worth. So, and think of that, Jamie. Here, one more application. You know, we're, our closest major city is Denver. Let's, mm-hmm, say you drive down to Denver. You know, you may have more experience down there than I do. I've got more experience with Cleveland and Dallas. But say you're down in Denver and you're on Colfax Avenue in the middle of, close to downtown, and there's a drunk rolling in the gutter. What's that guy worth?
With my knowledge now, everything.
Everything. What's the guy in the high-rise business tower, you know, successful businessman, owns half of Colorado. He's not, in a sense, more valuable than that guy in the gutter. They're both equal in that sense.
Be easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle.
Yeah, and I'd almost rather, not belittling the businessman, but it's almost easier to get through to the drunk,
mm-hmm,
than the business guy. You know, what needs does he have? You know, his wealth has blinded him to what he really needs. The guy in the gutter may wake up and go, man, I need God. And that's right. But as far as value, they're equal. That guy in the gutter is worth everything. Is he worth you bringing home and throwing up all over your car and your carpet?
Sure.
Yeah. He's worth everything. And he's spewing his stuff all over you, and he's bitter about you helping him, and is he worthy of that? Oh, yeah.
Now, let's switch gears to Abimelech.
Okay.
Because I have a question here.
Yeah.
I thought Abimelech and Abraham had kind of, you know, sewn everything together with with Sarah earlier. And now we're going to have a treaty at Beersheba.
Well, that's right. Well, they have, and you're right on all accounts. It's just that perhaps your scope is not large enough. These are major players in the Near East.
So
this is like the king of the Philistines.
Like,
yeah, this is the king of the Philistines, and his general is mentioned, Phicol. You know, the general is Abimelech's big enough that he's got a general of his army. And Abraham, by himself, with his family, is big enough that they do treaties with Abraham. So Abraham's a major player in the ancient Near East.
And Abimelech?
We don't know more about him in history than that. Philistine king at that time. Powerful guy.
And he shows up more... I mean, this...
Just
we're
these
hear,
two
yeah,
just
we're
these
hear
two
a little
instances.
Bit more about him.
Yeah.
And the seven ewe lambs is, am I reading that right? The perfect amount of lambs. It was.
And literally probably seven at that time.
That was on purpose.
Yeah. Here's my thing to say. I dug this well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What's like today? What do we argue over? I guess oil rights or mineral rights or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the ancient Near East, in that day, water rights are huge. You know, it's that's an arid country. So whoever can control the wells, that's a major thing. So Abraham's saying, hey, my guys dug this well.
Right.
I can water my sheep here, and so on. Here's my testimony that I dug this well.
And I guess just another... I don't want to say sovereignty, but that's the only word that comes to mind.
So what's it telling you as a reader, do you mean?
Yeah.
Well, let's think, before we consider what's it telling us today in the 21st century in Gypsum, Colorado, about a well in Israel,
mm-hmm.
3,000, 4,000 years ago. Well, what it was telling the original readers was, imagine if Moses is writing this, and he's writing it to Israelites who are coming out of Egypt. And they're going, quote, to the promised land. That's this land. And he's saying, this is not really foreign to us. We have a foothold here.
Gotcha.
Abraham's our father. He dug this well. That's how the original readers would have heard that. Hey, we got a foothold here. This isn't like we're foreigners to the land of Canaan. Our father Abraham was promised this land. There's a foothold here already. We're coming home. It's not like we're establishing a new home. We're coming home.
And ultimately, Abimelech recognizes that.
Oh, yeah. Abimelech does not consider Abraham someone to squish out of existence. He's,
right.
He's leery of Abraham.
And it said today and before... that Abimelech recognizes Abraham's
God's hand upon him. That's exactly right. That's what's... In fact, Jamie, without that, Abraham probably would have squished him out of it. That's why the mention of his general, Phicol, is there.
Right.
Without the recognition that your God is really powerful, we're not really granting you this will, and
right.
I'm taking your wife, and...
Abimelech would have acted totally different.
Yeah, he's an ancient Near Eastern monarch. I mean, they're all about power, and he recognizes there's a force here more powerful than me.
Well, and I think
that's good. And by the way, that's good of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too often we shortchange the Gentile, and they recognize that stuff. Don't write Abimelech off because he's a Philistine.
Right. Did I miss anything, Babo?
No, we got that. We got to get on to the next chapter because we got to see the fourth hitter come on. He's come on.
The cleanup.
That's right. So let's leave our listeners with the expectation of one of the greatest chapters in the Bible.
Oh, man. I read this next chapter, Bob, and just for our listeners, just to give you a peek at our next episode, I challenge each of you that have children to put yourself in Abraham's position and really, you know, discover and discuss in your own heart how you would have been able to handle that.
And, that's right.
You know, that's the next chapter, Bob. I will have a lot of questions because it.
All right. I understand.
And I'll
deflect
it, but
them with the universal. I don't know.
Now, my favorite part.
All right, let's say a prayer. Way to go, Lord. Even as we say that this is our favorite part, we remind our listeners that we have been called to pray always. For if there really is a God who's omniscient and omnipotent and has adopted us into his family and who proclaims to his children here that he hears our prayers and acts upon them, we would pray without ceasing. So we ask that you send forth the words of this